Hello, WWE Universe in the Philippines. This is Charlotte, and you're with Stan, Roe, and Raph on the SGP podcast. Woo!
Are you ready? Marks and Smarks. This is the Smart Gilas Pilipinas podcast.
You are listening to the longest-running weekly episodic Filipino wrestling podcast. This is the Smart Gilas Pilipinas podcast. Stan, Rowan, comes all together in Balay Kamus.
Balay de Kamus.
I really have to figure
Balay
that
out. Balay ni Kamus.
All right.
Balay ni Kamus. It is...
Balay dako.
Hindi naman siya ganun ka dako.
Yeah, fine.
I mean, who else has been here?
Well, a lot of people have been here.
A lot of people have been here.
People just walk right up.
Yeah, Brian Leo has been here.
Unfortunately.
Which usha?
I gave him my water. God damn it.
Okay. So
I fed you more.
Yeah. It's gonna be a fun episode of the podcast, actually. We've got a very special guest.
Yes.
He is a Filipino Canadian wrestler.
Yes.
Who's here in town. And
we just wanted him on the podcast, you know.
No,
you
he has a lot of stories to share, which you'll probably enjoy as much as we did.
Oh, you will get to find out who he went to class with, who he trained with, who his favorite opponent is.
Yeah.
Because by God,
a lot of the
who
names,
he's met.
A lot of the names that he'll be mentioning are names you've probably marked out to and jizzed over in some
and
cases.
And we'll do the same for this time.
He's also a huge advocate of yoga.
Yes.
Yes.
We will know
what
yoga
is.
What his brand of yoga is, man, that's special.
It's not DDP, though.
Yeah.
It's Billy Suede yoga.
Yeah. So Billy Suede, coming on the podcast, he'll be telling a lot of good stories. But before that, we just got to talk about that crazy All-Star Weekend and the subsequent Boogie Cousins fleecing. I'm not even going to call it a trade. I'm going to call it a robbery.
It is highway robbery.
Yeah.
It is highway robbery on a new level.
Well, if you're the Pelicans, it's a giveaway. If you're the Kings, it's a giveaway.
What is this? This is 3 years. 3 years they've been trying to trade him.
Yeah, 3 years they've been trying to trade Boogie, and his trade value has gone so low now. And Vivek has been so stubborn about the trade offers that he just accepted the one offer that he thought was really good because apparently he thinks Buddy Hield has Steph Curry upside.
Wait, Steph Curry upside?
Yeah, that's actually a quote that he thinks Buddy
Hield has
Stephen Curry potential.
That's bullshit.
It's actually on.
That's bullshit.
And the best thing is the stat that DeMarcus Cousins has made more threes this season than Buddy Hield has.
Well, fuck.
So,
the thing is, what scares me was that I read about the Lakers offer.
Yeah.
That the Lakers were in talks with them as well. And that the only thing that they said no to was Brandon fucking Ingram.
Yes, who is still a question mark at this point.
Huge question mark.
Yeah. I think the biggest takeaway out of all of this is how absurd the trade is to the point that NBA 2K17 won't let you do it.
Are you fucking kidding?
Yes.
Who ran that sim?
Somebody on the internet.
But to be fair, Naman, though, it's not because it was lopsided, but because the format of the trade doesn't literally let you do it.
Yeah. Like, the math doesn't work out.
The math doesn't work out to a fair salary cap.
And the players that have to be let go on both sides.
Because
Kings are receiving more players than they're giving away. Mm. So
because you can't move. There are no D-League affiliates in this version.
You can't call down people.
So, to put it simply, it's a robbery. I'm sure a lot of other people have said more things about this. We just really wanted to get it out there that this happened. And that it's so insane. I still can't wrap my mind around it.
It's one of those things that it's like, it's when I heard about it, it's like, are we in the fucking Twilight Zone? Is this a joke? Because,
no,
you know, there are a lot of these jokes that go around like right after All-Star Game.
Yeah. Ang nakakatawa pa is when it happened, I was listening to a podcast where Dave Yeager, the coach of the Kings, was like, oh yeah, we're never going to trade DeMarcus. DeMarcus just committed to the Kings and stuff like that. And being like, boom,
surprise.
Shit. Gets traded right after the All-Star Game.
Surprise, nigga.
Other news from the NBA you may not have heard about is Lakers changing their management. So they
and
fired Jim Buss.
Williams.
Yeah. That's a minor move.
Too.
So they fired Jim Buss, they fired Mitch Kupchak and their PR guy, and they replaced him with Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, the former agent of Kobe, current agent of James Harden, Avery Bradley, and Eric Gordon, among others. So that's huge because it's an example of a literal COO, child of owner, getting kicked out of the organization he owns.
It's one of those straight up Cersei Lannister shit.
Is Jerry Buss dead?
No, he died February 2013.
Doctor.
Who else? Who I mean? Who else would I mean?
Well, ano mang Jerry Buss Jr. Jim Buss is the son.
Jim Buss is the guy who got fired. Jim Buss is the guy who got fired.
Yeah, so he is still technically an owner, but he's no longer president of basketball operations. And that's a victory for everyone who's ever been screwed by a COO. And I'll leave it at that. Now,
on-air handshake.
So, big week of wrestling ahead. We've got PWR Live. Path of Gold.
Path of Gold.
Baby.
Yeah, Path of Gold is taking place this weekend. It'll be back at Bayanihan. So we're
Bayanihan Unilab Center, 2 p.m.
Yeah, it's going to be extra early. Parking is free, by the way, so don't worry about that.
Don't park across the street where
afterwards, if you're not going to Mass, since Swansea is closed.
Yeah.
Wait, Swansea's closed? Yes,
it's on Sunday.
On Sunday night.
So let's all have food. Elsewhere. There are a lot of places.
We have options.
Yeah. So go ahead. And it's never too late to tell your friends from PWR if you want the discounted rates.
Yes, we still have discounts. Yes.
We are more than willing to dish them out for you. So you know where to find us. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram.
Yeah. If you want a discount, just hit one of us up.
Yeah.
Hit all of us up.
No. Social.
Oh, yeah. We'll tell you our social media handles later on after the show. Yeah. Right? And
But you know what? The best thing, the best bit of news among all of this shit, there is going to be new network merch on Sunday.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I just saw.
And Mel, I got an email from Mel from HR, and it just looks so good. Like, I'm copying this. Insta-cop. Insta-cop.
My only issue with it is that it's kind of late and it's kind of passe to have Bullet Club spinoff merch.
Actually, I would have to agree.
I don't mind.
It looks good, but you know, it kind of misses the boat. Just a little bit.
It missed the boat 2 years ago.
Minimum 2 years ago. I guess.
Years ago, we've jumped the shark with this merch thing.
Yeah,
but anyway. It still looks good. I mean, we barely had merch 2 years ago.
Yeah, sure, it does look good. If you're a fan of the network for some strange reason, please go and cop one of those shirts. It really does look good on people.
Plus, it does help. It goes a long way.
Yes.
All right. So, without further ado, let's get to our interview with the beautiful Billy Swain. All right. So, we're sitting here in Casa Camus.
Casa de Camus.
Balay kasi. It's balay.
Why?
Are you not Ilonggo?
I am. But then it's just, you know, we've already coined this.
Well, I associate it with being more Tisoy Spanish than Tisoy.
But that's not true. Ilonggo.
That's not true, though. That's not true, though.
Anyway, you're fucking racist.
Would it be called Hacienda?
That's an actual farm.
Ranch.
Oh, okay. That's like a ranch.
You're at the ranch then.
Yeah.
El Rancho
de Camus.
Yeah, so we're actually joined here by a very special guest. He is a Filipino independent wrestler based in Canada, and we're so lucky to be joined by him. He's actually been working with the PWR guys, and by the
recently.
Recently. So by the time you hear this, you'll have noticed that there is a relationship with the boys and with our guest tonight. So please welcome to the podcast, Billy Swain.
Good evening.
Hello. I wouldn't say I'm that special, but, you know, hey, thanks for having me here, guys.
No, I think, you know, as someone who's in boot camp, when you come to boot camp and then you show off what you can do coming from, you know, an actual wrestling background, from an actual wrestling place, I think it's safe to say that you are pretty special. Like, it's in the same way, Chili Willy is more than special.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Well, like, I'll tell you guys honestly, when I walked into that boot camp, the only reason why I trained with you guys is because I hadn't been training in, like, a couple of weeks before coming into it. So I was kind of a little out of shape, and I just sort of just wanted to go through the motions and
stuff. 2 weeks
and,
isn't that bad. Come on.
You'd be surprised, like, what some of our guys, we go through, like, 3 weeks, 4 weeks at a time, and then you're not doing shit.
Yeah, I've been there too, so yeah. But it was great. I got my sweat on that day, and it was great. It was great to roll around with everybody that was there, so yeah.
I guess the first question, at least on my mind, is how did you find us, or how did we find you?
Oh, well, I guess it's the good old power of the internet, I guess. You know,
yes.
A couple months ago, when I was sort of planning my trip to come here to the Philippines, I basically was, you know, just planned to, you know, do some vacationing, visit my mom, had some friends that were coming through, and then I was just like, all right, I just researched, you know, Philippines pro wrestling, and then all of a sudden PWR came up, and I was like, all right, let's see where this goes, and then I contacted you guys off the Facebook page, I guess, and a couple of messages later, here we are in the Rancho de
In my place.
Yeah, here we are. Yeah.
Hey, but you know, it's an interesting thing because like we receive the page receives a lot of these inquiries from guys who claim to be wrestlers.
We have actually received legitimate inquiries from people legit on television at the moment. So yeah, it's just that we can't pay
most of these guys
can't pay them to work for us as much as we want to, as much as we mark out for them. But yeah, it's I think as I was telling Billy off the air that I think a lot of the help PWR has received since day one has been strokes of luck. Mm-hmm. So you coming by as well as you know Chili Billy hanging around here is a major
stroke of luck. Not just hanging around. I mean, what? Resetting in nearby
Boot Camp. Oh yeah, sure, okay. Yeah.
That in itself.
You didn't have to tell people where he lived.
Well, we didn't say where he lives. We just said he reset nearby.
Yeah.
All right, right.
That's like you know how big the metro is.
Yes, it's huge.
It's huge, man.
Manila is huge. Like, oh my god. Yeah, it's huge and it's hot. That is true.
That is true.
You came at a time when the cold fronts were over, so like a couple weeks ago, everything was really cold.
The 2 week cold front.
Okay, now how cold are we talking about here?
Oh, yeah, you're from Canada.
Okay, you're from Canada. Okay.
When I left Vancouver, it was snowing.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, and I absolutely hate it. Like winter, like Vancouver is my is my home. Summertime is the best time to visit Vancouver, but if you find yourself there in the wintertime, like it gets dark at 4 o'clock.
Is it miserable?
I would say it's miserable, and there, it makes people miserable. Like you know, it starts getting dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and like you just don't want to be there.
It's like drinking your basement weather.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah. I would say that the cold fronts here were like spring weather in North America.
Okay,
for sure.
That I can handle. Yeah. I think that'd be okay.
Like t-shirt weather there.
I guess I would say t-shirt one layer two layers weather
so like at this point how long have you been in Manila?
I landed about a week ago, so depending on when this comes out I've been here for about a week now.
And how long will you be staying here?
Well that's sort of up in the air. I booked an open ticket to come out here. I usually like doing that. The last big trip I did was to Australia, and that was also an open ticket as well. I ended up staying there for about a year, and like, it was just open, you know. Like same thing here. Like, I just booked an open ticket, had some travel plans and stuff like that, and we'll see how it goes. You know, I like to keep it open. I don't know. It's me personally. I like to keep it open.
Absolutely,
like
open-minded.
Yeah,
open-minded
yeah.
business.
For sure.
All right. So, tell us about your story. Like, how did you get into pro wrestling? We were talking off the air earlier. You said that you entered the business at 24. But when did your fandom start? Because I assume that it had to start from being a fan. Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, we're all wrestling fans here, right? So I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Yeah. I
didn't get the memo.
I'm pretty sure at some point when we were kids, we all saw our first, you know, wrestling match on
TV. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
For me, some of my earliest memories were like, you know, sitting in the living room with my dad and we're watching like Undertaker on like Superstars, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And watching that. And I just remember, you know, like characters like the Undertaker, Ricky Steamboat, Macho Man.
Yes.
Those guys. And these guys were just unbelievable, like larger than life characters, right? And, but like, so that was when I was watching WWF at the time. When it was still WWF. I had a cousin that lived in California, and so in California they had like different channels, right?
Yeah. Sure.
And that was the first time I saw like some NWA stuff.
Okay,
like,
WCW.
Even before.
Oh, okay. NWA.
Yeah. Like,
say NWO.
Like specifically, I remember watching a match where it was like the Road Warriors. Like, before they were Legion of Doom, Road Warriors, like, they had the black...
The pads.
Yeah, the black pads with, like, the silver spikes and, like, the
mohawk. Raiders gear,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, exactly, right? And they're, you know, they're coming down the ring. That was when, like, they didn't have any barriers, like, guardrails or anything like that. So they're fighting their way through the crowd. And they just, like, you know, smoky arenas, like, dimly lit. And I'm just like, man, these guys are, like, the real deal. Like, I knew what... Obviously, was watching WWF at the time.
That's cool.
I kind of knew it was, you know, work and stuff like that. Yeah.
But when I saw like the NWA stuff, I was like, okay, these guys look legit. Like, and then I think after that, I saw a match. It was like Dusty Rhodes versus somebody, and it was like a cage match. And that was the first time I saw blood. And like, you know, like
in color.
Yeah, right. And like Dusty's like all, you know, bleeding, and like he's ripping his hair. Oh, and I was just like, man, these guys. I think this is real. Like I told my dad, like this is real stuff, right? So, anyways, like yeah, those were like some of my first early memories of pro wrestling. And ever since I was a kid, I was like hooked. You know, like when I was in high school, I was like the kid. That all my friends said, they're like, yeah, you're probably going to be
a wrestler. Yeah, a wrestler. One day.
Yeah. I remember, you know, joining the amateur wrestling team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I'd always get in trouble from my coach because, like, you know, I'd slip in a figure four leg lock or something like that, you know? And they're like, yo, like, you can't do that, you know?
Is it illegal?
No.
Is it illegal hold? But
it's a hold that you can use, but then it's just.
It's weak.
I'm pretty sure it's frowned upon. Like, I'm pretty sure they'd be like, yo, that's, you know. That's
it's like, there are only so many things you can do in amateur, like, catch wrestling that work, that actually translate from watching pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So it's like, the figure four is just, you know how tedious it is to put on.
Yeah. You know, you gotta spin around and you gotta hook the other leg. And it's like, you don't have time to do that now. And then, you know, fast forward, like I said, like we mentioned before, I was 24, 25 when I first started breaking, when I broke in. I remember watching the local TV and the local promotion at the time, ECCW. They were running. They had like a 1 hour time slot on Saturday afternoons, right? And I was watching it, and I was like, "Hey, this is in Vancouver." And then I think when I was in grade 9 or something like that, I was like 13, 14 years old.
Yeah,
I went to one of the local pro wrestling shows in town, and then I put two and two together. And then I remember watching, and there's a couple. Let's just say jabronis on the show at the time. Sorry, guys, if you guys know who you are. And I was like, you know, I think I could, you know, like the possibility of me turning a dream into like reality, all of a sudden blossomed in my head. And I was like, yeah, I played sports growing up as a kid, so you know.
I was actually about to ask that, like, once you finish it up, like. In high school, did you actually, apart from the amateur wrestling, were you doing anything else varsity wise?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're Filipinos, so we got basketball in our blood, right?
Hey,
so,
there you go.
So, you know, I was playing basketball, I was playing football, you know, obviously I was wrestling, stuff like that. I was playing ice hockey ever since I was a little kid growing up.
Canada.
Yeah, right? Canada, eh? And, yeah, so, I mean, you know, I had sort of an athletic background, and I was watching some of the guys like rolling around. I was like, man, I could, you know, do a pretty good shot at this. And so, anyways, they ran a commercial, you know, be a pro wrestler, call this number, right? And I was like, hell yeah, am I gonna call this number? So I called them, and then they told me to come down, bring $500 deposit to like start training, and then the rest is history, man.
But what were you doing at the time? Like you mentioned, you were 24. So were you working? Yeah. Were you out of school?
Yeah, I just sort of did a little stint at like college. Didn't really finish college or whatever. Wasn't really interested in what I was studying or whatever. And then you know I started working just jobs and stuff like that. I was thinking I was like bartending at the time or something like that. And and then it just went back to going to that local show and then watching the thing on TV. I was just like, screw it, let's give this a go, you know. So
you said that the deposit to get in was like $500, but how expensive was it really to train? And who was your trainer?
Yeah, a little bit more. So the story behind that was when I first started training in Vancouver, I only was training for about like 3 months up until the gym where training was being held. Whoever had the lease on it or whatever, it was like a kickboxing gym.
Okay.
And so the lease was up, and then so we didn't have a spot for the ring to put the ring up.
Yeah. Sounds familiar.
actually, that's very close to home. Very close to home,
man. Right. And so then that stopped, and I was just like, I gotta keep doing this, right? So went online, checked out schools that were nearby, and then Storm Wrestling Academy popped up. From Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Right? I shot him an email, told him my situation, At the time, he runs a 3-month program, it was already halfway through the first month. And then I emailed him, told him, I was like, I got a couple months under my belt for training. Just wondering if I can, swing by and like be part of the class. And of course, he's like, yeah, no problem. Like, but again, bring your deposit and then we'll get you in, right? So, in terms of how much it costs, like, well, I guess, it's up there. It's about a couple, at least a couple grand, maybe 2-3 grand, depending on.
On how long?
Yeah, I guess how long it is. I at the time I had that money, and my dad at the time, he helped me out with a flight over there. Yeah. And so I flew over there at the wrong time of the year, which was the winter time. we were talking about earlier about how Vancouver is cold. Calgary is cold. Mm. It's a different kind of cold. It's more of a drier cold, but it snows so much there at certain points of the year. And so it gets like minus 10. But then there's a thing called the wind chill factor.
Yep, wind chill.
You know all about it, right? About it gets to like minus 30, minus 40. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't even, And like, I lived in a place that was about an hour bus ride away. So every day, 5 days a week, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., I'd make that one hour trek on that bus all the way to Storm's Academy. And then, he would teach us how to bump. Teach how to run ropes and all that sort of stuff.
How was it like training under Landstorm? Was he exciting?
Okay, here's the thing about Storm. I love the guy. He still remembers who I am after all these years. We still sort of email each other like during Christmas and stuff like that. Tell us, say what's up and
happy holidays and all.
Yeah, right. Here's the thing. Like it took, I think our class, it took about a month for us to like warm up to him, like for him to like actually crack a smile, because you know he's giving.
He's a very serious guy.
He's a very serious. He's a really serious guy. Very intelligent guy, like inside and outside of the ring. Yeah. So it was like a feeling out process for all of us involved, right? But we had a really funny class. Like there's at least three or four other guys that I still keep in contact with them, and like they're just like really cool, like funny guys. And then I think we all knew, we're like, all right, so Lance is a serious guy, let's try to crack a smile, right? So eventually, after that 1 month happened, something happened during training, and he started laughing, and that was it. That's all it took, And then after that, it was cool, right? But, he's a very serious trainer. He always emphasized, the basics, basics of pro wrestling, like chain wrestling or running ropes or whatever it is, right? He ensured that everybody that comes out of his school like knows the basics of wrestling. So other than that, he was great. Like his facility is awesome. He's got like a legit WWE ring in there. First time I ever was in a ring with like legit ropes,
right?
Not the boxing ropes.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, not like you know how they're like WCW. They have like the cable sort of ropes, like
super tight.
Yeah, super tight. Not that much spring in it, but like yeah. Some of my best times was spent at on Calgary at Storm's Academy. Yeah.
Is there anyone from that class of yours?
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Anyone we know.
If you guys are familiar with Tyler Breeze.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, no way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, shout out to Tyler Breeze. What up?
You were in the same class as Tyler
Breeze. Yeah.
So how was he like?
At the time, he's a shy, skinny kid. Sorry, buddy, but he was. He was. He actually grew up about a couple hours outside of where I grew up in BC and back in Canada. He was like a small town kid. He was young and eager, little blonde, short, little haircut and stuff. And
actually, I've seen photos of that, like in his montage before his NXT call. Yeah. I'm just like, yeah, he's pretty dorky.
Yeah, right? So,
nice guy, though.
Super nice guy. Yeah, I'll still throw him a text here and there and be like, congrats on all his success and stuff like that. And like, yeah, he's still, still sort of keeping contact and stuff like that. But yeah, Tyler Breeze, he was pretty much the most notable coming out of that class.
So what year was that? Like, what years were you in the Storm Academy?
So 2007, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I made my pro debut in February 2007.
Who was your first match against?
Oh, a fellow by the name of JR Trinidad. He's from Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Still a really good friend of mine. One of the guys that I still keep in contact with. Super funny guy. He trained in the first class, in Lance's first class.
Okay. And then, first ever. Okay.
And then he came back a year later when I started there. And he just came back to like help out, you know, take bumps for Lance and stuff like that. And then as soon as I met him, like we clicked right away and stuff. And we still, he was good. He's a super funny guy. He's Latino. He's Puerto Rican, right? So he's always cracking jokes and stuff. And yeah, man. That's my first match.
How was that experience like? So you're coming from the Storm Wrestling Academy to have your first match. You're debuting.
Right.
Were you already Billy Suede at the time?
Yeah. Yes. I was. I took the name Billy Suede while I was training in Vancouver still. So before I came into Calgary.
Okay.
Man, like, you know, like when wrestlers start out, like they have this, you know, big idea. Like, you know, like lights and
who do you want to be?
Yeah, right. But like the first match I ever wrestled was somewhere in buttfuck nowhere, Calgary or Alberta, in front of like 15, 20 people.
Man.
You know, it's the first match on the card. I got paid $5 for it. You know what I mean?
And at
like,
least you got paid.
Right? Yeah.
You know, and It was. I mean, other than that, it was the biggest rush of my life, right? Like
when your music hits.
Exactly. I was just gonna say, like, you're behind that curtain,
and then
always like, holy smokes, like this is the music that I picked out for myself, you know? And then like all of a sudden, like you forget what you're gonna do, and then you're like, oh my god. And then, but I think from that first day to now, every time I step through that curtain, it's like a light switch that turns on, and like you just get into your character, and then you become that wrestler that, you know, whatever idea you have in your head, and you just go out there and like, and you do your best to do a good show for the fans, right? To the 15 or 20 fans that are out there, you know what I mean?
You mentioned that you had this Billy Suede gimmick since your Vancouver days, but who is Billy Suede, or what is the character supposed to be?
How am I gonna say this? Well, I can tell you most recently, working as the beautiful Billy Suede. I don't know, you know how a lot of people will borrow certain things from certain wrestlers, people that they look up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I will blatantly say that I consider myself sort of like the Filipino Ric Flair.
Oh.
Just
okay.
I mean, obviously I can't even hold a candle to the great wrestler that he is, right?
Yeah.
But I guess like now you can just, I guess I model my stuff out of that. But back in the day, I guess I was just like the playing like the underdog. You know what I mean? And of course, being in Vancouver in Canada, like there's not too many Asian wrestlers out there, right?
So you stand out.
I stand out. But it was like I was pretty much like the Ricky Steamboat of Vancouver. You know what I mean? I was like the only Asian guy.
Because you're Asian.
Yeah, right.
Stereotypes playing to your strengths.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, I mean, I had no problem with that. Like Ricky Steamboat, like, you know,
whatever makes you pop out, right?
Yeah. Different. I mean, I'm pretty sure like a lot of the guys back home still they call me Steams. Like
it's Steams.
Yeah, that was like my sort of nickname at the time. It wasn't because I had awesome arm drags, but it was the fact that I stood out like compared to everybody else. So, you know, and like I played that. It was fun. It was absolutely fun being able to play a baby face, especially like super baby face. You know what I mean? And like it's sort of easy in a way to like, sort of get over. You know what I mean? If you have a certain look and you were able to play that sort of role, you know, so. In the beginning, like it was fun, and like I was able to reap a lot of benefits, I guess, you know what I mean. And but yeah, I guess the gimmick was just the underdog, you know. Still am probably the smallest guy on the roster back home, right, compared to everybody else. But yeah, just that whole underdog thing, you know what I mean, which was good because it's sort of easy to do, you know what I mean?
So what's your style like? For someone who's never seen a Billy Suede match, what style do you wrestle?
Well, I was a big fan of like the Japanese strong style.
Okay.
Back then, you know, in the
late... Anyone in particular that?
Oh, guys like Kenta, Naomichi Marufuji.
Okay, some that of my generation.
Yeah. Like when Noah was on top. Yeah, like those guys were huge. Like, I remember I went to like a wrestling camp down in Eldon, Missouri, like Midwest U.S. Right, and Naomichi Marufuji was one of the clinicians there.
Oh, he was there.
Yeah,
because awesome.
Harley Race's camp. Yeah,
oh.
Harley Race's camp.
I have read about those camps, and it does get a bit ridiculous with like the people that he pulls in that assist to that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
he brings in NJPW guys like left and right.
Absolutely.
And then AJPW guys when he had like some affiliation with them.
Absolutely. Yeah, man.
So how was your experience?
Going to the camp?
Yeah.
Oh, it was eye-opening, you know. It was my first time being in a sort of wrestling camp environment where there was, oh man, there's at least 40 guys there, and everybody at the time was under the impression that, like, because I think they always do like some sort of scholarship.
Yeah,
at the end of it.
And then they send a guy off.
Yeah, yeah.
Like depending on where it is, it's like Japan or
excursion type.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, but for me personally, I was there with some of my really good friends. I was down there with the Bollywood Boys, and
Harvin Gerv.
Yeah, Harvin Gerv and Kyle O'Reilly as well at the time. And I was just there, at, like, having a good time with my buds, you know, like, being able to travel with them, and, like, and it's funny, because, like, Eldon, Missouri, man, like, there's not too many Asian
there's
dudes.
Not much, there's not much there, right?
There's not much, exactly, right? So, like, I remember we would go break out for lunch, and then we'd go to this, like, diner, and then, like, it was almost stereotypical, where you see, like, old people with like, you know, plaid shirts, just you know,
retirees.
Lounging. Yeah, they're just lounging there,
staring at these big dudes just walked in.
Yeah, exactly. Then you see like 20, 30 like big, you know, wrestler looking dudes walk in, and they're all like, oh, look what the cat, you know, dragged in. And then all of a sudden they see me, an Asian dude, two brown, like, East Indian guys.
Yes.
And then...
It's all right to call them brown. Don't
yeah,
worry.
Okay.
Well, we get two the people, the listeners get it.
Okay. Two brown guys and then a white guy. And there's also a black dude with us. His name's Brandon Marino. Okay. He's a good friend of ours as well. So we were, like, you know, the odd bunch, right? And they just... It was, like, almost, like, you know, like, midway where they're eating.
And
they
stop.
And they stop. And they're like, well, what the hell we got here, you know? And it was
this
so
is
funny.
Midwest Missouri.
Yeah.
What we got here.
Exactly, yeah. So it was quite the experience down there. But nonetheless, it was super fun. Like, you know, all the five of us, we all, like, crammed into, like, one hotel room, you know? And, like, it was good. It was a good bonding session and, like, to this day, like, I'm still, like, really good friends with all those guys, so...
How long was that for?
That was only, what, maybe 3 or 4 days, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, they would run camp. Like I said, Naomichi Marufuji was there, Takeshi Morishima was there. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Big dude,
yeah.
Right?
Retired now.
Yeah.
The big dude Brian wrestled.
Ricky Steamboat
was
there.
Was there, training.
Wow. That was it.
Was that after his WrestleMania appearance? The last one?
I think it was before.
Oh,
yeah.
So he was still in wrestling shape back then.
He was. You know what? He was. Like, he had that big barrel chest, you know, like, you know, salt and pepper hair and stuff. And like, but he was amped, man. Like, he would, like, go into the ring and stuff like that and, like, show us some stuff and, like, you know, like, yo, Rick, like, take it easy, right? but that was...
Don't kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you do when you first met him? You know, steamboat.
Oh, you know, like, I'm like, yo, hey, how's it going, sir? Nice to meet you. You know, give him the worker handshake and stuff. And, like, it was super cool being able to, like, meet, like, Fuji and Steamboat, and, like, all in, like, you know, a span of, like, 3-4 days, right? And, like, you know, they taught some good stuff. And, like, Steamboat was, like, really... sort of talking about how they did stuff in the WWE and like how that operated and like and it was awesome. And then of course meeting Harley Race was that was unbelievable, man. Like, this dude, like, this old guy, just, like,
this
still
legend.
Yeah. He, like, talks like this, and, like, has a cigarette in his mouth. Yo, like, it was crazy, that whole experience, yeah.
You mentioned that, you keep mentioning how you stand out because you're Asian, but is being Asian or being Filipino something you incorporated into your gimmick, or is that something that you just let speak for itself?
I think it's more so I just let speak for myself. When I broke in and stuff like that, especially being in Canada or Vancouver, and we're considered pretty multicultural out there, right? Yeah. So I didn't really want to sort of use that as a gimmick, like, oh, I'm this Filipino guy, you know, like,
why not?
I don't know. I sort of just wanted my wrestling to speak for itself. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I didn't really want to go into that, the whole, you know, nationality or like Asian thing. You know, I was just
don't stereotype it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure it was also because, as you said, Vancouver being a multicultural city, mm-hmm. They got it anyway.
It's no surprise. You know what I mean? Oh, it's just amazing, dude. Like, it looks like the dude that, you know, that lives beside me or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So, I just let my wrestling and my work rate, like, sort of just speak for itself. Yeah.
And how was your family's reaction, like, when you got into the industry? Like, how did they support it? Were they reluctant?
Okay. Were they expecting you to be on TV or anything?
So, my mom, right, she, like, okay, so.
Sorry, do they know how the business works?
No, wow. not really. Wow. They don't know, like, from a worker standpoint. They don't know how. All they see is, well, all my mom sees is me getting body slammed, and, like, you know, she's going, like, and I, like, you know, you're like, what do you do?
Yeah,
I
like, right?
But the thing, okay, so
typical Filipino mom,
right? Yeah. The thing with my mom is like, when the first time I got my ear pierced, she's like, what are you doing? Like, you know, blah, blah. Next day, she's like, you know what? That kind of looks nice on you. Same thing with my rest. Same thing with wrestling. Like, I told her, mom, this is what I'm going to be doing. You know, I'm going to quit school and this is what I'm going to do. And she's like, oh, you know, you're going to get hurt, blah, blah, blah. And then the day I came back with, you know, I won, like, some, like, title or something like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then, okay. And then I showed her the belt. And she's like, oh, really? And then she would start taking pictures. start telling her, like, her sisters friends, and her friends. Like, oh, my son's a champion or something like that. Like, I'm like, all right.
That's the dream.
Yeah. With my dad. Here's a quick little story. My dad was obviously against it, right?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, not because, like, I would have gotten hurt or anything like that. But he's just more like, oh, what are you doing with your life? Like, you should be blah, 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 right? And then
later, have a steady job.
Exactly, right? Later on, like, as like, my career progressed, all of a sudden, he tells me this story of how when he immigrated to Vancouver, him and his buddies would go watch the local pro wrestling shows. How they would, like, you know, get on a bus.
Right.
Go travel to New Westminster, which was a city just outside of Vancouver, and
not
they would
far.
Yeah, and they would go watch, like, the pro wrestling there, and how much, and, like, he told me, he's like, yeah, you know, me and your uncle would go down and, like, watch it, and, like, we would always stay in the
get
back
drunk.
Because they would get hammered, stay in the back because they're scared of, like, the wrestlers and stuff like that. And I'm like, Dad, like why didn't you tell me, like, and, you know, like, why are you always telling me blah, blah, blah? And then he, you know, obviously he's just being like a concerned parent and stuff like that, right? But
it's always about what makes money and what doesn't make money, right?
Yeah, right. But, you know, deep down, you know, I'm pretty sure deep down inside, like, both my dad and my mom, like, you know,
we're very happy.
Yeah, they're seeing that, like, I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing, so that's I guess what they, you know, just
that's the dream.
Yeah. They just want to see their son happy.
It really is a dream.
Yeah.
My parents are upstairs probably thinking, when's my son going to debut?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my mom was always telling me, so it's a good thing you're in the Philippines right now because you can find a wife and stuff.
No, you found wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So let's say back to your career. So your career's taking you everywhere from Calgary to Eldon, Missouri. When the 2010s picked up, like, where did you find yourself? Like, which promotions did you work with, or who were you working with at the time?
Yeah, you know, I did a couple road trips down to the U.S., Oregon, did some stuff down in, I think it was California as well. But the the furthest trip I've been was Australia.
Okay.
Back in 2012, I was here in the Philippines for a wedding. I stayed here for about a month, and then at that time, when I said, you know, how I like to take open tickets, right?
Yeah.
I booked myself an open ticket to Australia.
Which part of Australia?
I landed in Melbourne.
Okay, Melbourne.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I got myself a work holiday visa so I could stay there for about a year.
Mm.
And I don't know if you guys are familiar with another Filipino wrestler. His name's Carlo Cash Money Cannon.
Oh, no. I've not heard of him.
Okay. Well, you guys
there.
He's from Melbourne. Yeah, you guys should know him. You guys should know. He is... He's like my bacata for life, man. Like I messaged him on Facebook because he was part of Lance's first class as well.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Cool.
And
he's Canadian and he went to Australia.
No, he's Australian.
Oh, he's Australian. Yeah, he went to Canada.
He came to Canada.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's far.
Yeah, it's far.
Okay. He's Australian, so it's all right.
Yeah. So he was in Storm's first class, and that's how that was where our commonality was. And then so out of the blue, I just messaged him. Haven't talked to him before at all. And then I told him, I was like, hey, man, you know, I graduated from Storms. I'm going to be in Australia for a bit. Just wondering if you can, you know, help, you know, just show me around for a bit. That's all I'm asking for. He does tenfold. He comes, picks me up from the airport. He lets me stay at his place for like 2 weeks, like at his parents' place. Because at the time, I had a friend that was living in Melbourne, but she was traveling.
Mm.
So she wasn't there at the time when I flew in.
And it's pre Airbnb.
This is pre Airbnb, exactly, right? And it's awesome. Like, so Carlo is like this, you know, Filipino dude. He's built like a tank, right? He likes to wear a lot of tank tops, like Gold Gym's tank tops,
okay.
And he's got like a mohawk, and it's usually colored, right?
Okay.
So I kind of knew a picture. I had a picture in my mind through Facebook, and then so I'm at the airport waiting, you know, sitting down waiting, like I get a text from him or whatever. He's like, okay bro, I'm gonna come pick you up. And all of a sudden I see like this mohawk like walking through the crowd, and I'm like, okay, I guess then that's it. As soon as we, like, he had sunglasses on, but as soon as we locked eyes, like, smiles right away, like we click like super instantly, like maybe because we're Filipino, I guess, or whatever. But
easy.
Like, yeah, right. As soon as we saw each other, like, we clicked, and like he took care of me when I was down there. He right now he runs his own school out there. It's called Vicious Pursuit. Shout outs to Vicious Pursuit. But when he first started, that's when I was there.
Yeah.
So like when he started school, like, he didn't have a facility. He had a ring. He had a high spots ring that he bought.
Okay.
And he stored it at this like abandoned like elementary school, like in somewhere.
Huh.
Like, yeah.
There's an idea.
Yeah. Right?
Abandoned elementary school.
Yeah.
Marami ganyan dito.
Right?
I think you know a few in Laguna.
There you go. Right? And like one day I was like, yo man, what do you guys do for training? He's like, oh, well, we have this ring, but we don't really have a place to set it up. But he's like, you know what? Screw it. Let's just set it up like on school ground. So that's what we did. Like middle of Australian summer, right?
Yeah. Oh god,
it's
that's scorching.
Yeah, like 30, 40
that's
degrees,
scorching.
Right? It's Australian sun. So we're out there. There's like myself, Carlo, his girlfriend at the time, and then two of his trainees, and we were all there, and his dad. And so we're all there. We're setting up this ring in the there's no shade. So we're in the fucking blazing sun, and we just started to roll around, you know, and like it was a first for me, but you know, like it was awesome, and we did that maybe like twice, and then later on in that year he found a spot, and then he started getting like guys to join his school, and then I sort of like I was like, hey Carlo, like do you mind if I just help you guys out? Like, and he's like, yeah, for sure. Like we were cut from the same cloth, like we were both trained at Storms, so we both know what we're gonna be teaching. So yeah, I pretty much, it was like he was Lance Storm and then I was, you know, his helper, you know what I mean? So like I, you know, obviously he was taking bumps and all that sort of stuff, right? But you know, I was like super happy to like help him out, you know. And like how it's grown now, it's crazy. Like he's got like 10 times is the amount of trainees and stuff, and like he's doing really good with the program down there, and like yeah, he's doing really well for himself. So
You spent a year in Australia. Yeah. So what did you do in that year? Did you like get a lot of bookings, or how did you get around?
Yeah. So Carlo helped me. He hooked me up with MCW, Melbourne City Wrestling out there.
Okay.
And I had maybe 5 or 6 shows with them. And they're just all like, you know, mid card matches or anything like that. I think one of the matches I had was like a main event. It was like a big 6-man or something like that. And this is one time, and this was another first for me. We wrestled in a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah. So how's that like?
Okay, so it's
there's another idea.
Yeah.
Is this in the basement of a Chinese
restaurant? No.
In the middle of a Chinese restaurant.
Okay, so it's called the Dragonfly. I think it's called the Dragonfly. Okay. And they're like, yeah, so our next show is going to be at this Chinese restaurant. I'm like, legit Chinese restaurant. So yeah, legit Chinese. So we go there. The ring's already set up. It's in the middle of the restaurant.
Holy shit.
So they moved out the tables, but they still had tables around the ring. Not only did they have tables, but they were still serving dinner.
So like Chinese laureate dinners.
Yes.
Are being served while a wrestling show is taking place.
I'm coming out.
There's an idea.
I can totally make money out of this now.
Gloria Madison.
I know, right?
I step out of the curtain. I'm smelling fried rice and fucking sweet sour pork, man. And I'm wrestling in the Chinese. It was crazy. It was quite the experience. It was awesome, you know. First for me, and like,
this isn't like one of those small ass like low ceiling Chinese
restaurants. No.
That's the thing. It's like, because you know, Chinese restaurants in Australia,
yeah,
not all the time. It's like they're not the big ones. So
right.
Like, I'm imagining like the one in Men in Black. Like right. That type of Chinese restaurant.
Yeah. No, it wasn't like a little hole in the wall. It was actually like pretty big place.
Gloria Madison, though.
Yeah.
So, right. What's the craziest venue you've ever performed at?
I think that Chinese restaurant. I'm pretty sure it was that. Like, the most, like, bizarre or, like, out of place, you know, venue is probably that. I've wrestled in a lot of venues where, you know, it was, like, small, like, low ceilings.
Yeah.
And, like, again, in front of, like, you know, 10, 15 people. But in terms of, like, things standing out like that, probably the Chinese restaurant in Melbourne was probably the strangest one.
So when did you figure out that it was time to leave Australia and like go back home?
Well, after a year there, I guess you can say I got a little homesick. I guess, I don't know, it was either that or like my visa ran out, and then, you know, I was running low on funds and stuff like that, and obviously technically I couldn't like work, right, because my visa was running out, right? So so I just, you know, decided to just go back home, which was pretty good timing, because at the time, like I was telling you guys before, with this place called the Commodore Ballroom, which is pretty much
That rings a bell.
Yeah, the Commodore Ballroom. Yeah. It's like the most iconic live music venue in Vancouver.
Yeah.
They, ECCW, the promotion I've been working for, they were able to run a show there. And then I think it was in like January, end of January. So then I flew back like beginning of January, found out about it, you know, messaged the booker. I was like, look, you better put me on this fucking show. Because if you don't, you know, like, I'm going to get pissed, right? So came back. They were like, yeah, cool, we'll put you on the show. Came back. And then, you know, I started just getting back into the scene again in the Vancouver scene, which is great because, the first Commodore Ballroom show, that like, it really boosted like the interest of the people in Vancouver,
in
the
city.
Just like, I mean, the scene, like any independent scene anywhere you go, it's always like a little sort of small.
You start small, and then there's that one moment where you just boom,
yeah,
hits.
Exactly. And I think for that promotion, it was that running that Commodore Ballroom, running that venue, since like I said, we ran I think 6 or 7 shows since then. All of them have been pretty good draws, and like, it's good because it's like right in the downtown area. Everybody knows the name.
Nice part of the neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely a nice part of the neighborhood. Like pretty much in the entertainment district, everybody knows the name of the Commodore Ballroom. So it was good. We had like a lot of like non-wrestling fans that came through, or like a lot of wrestling fans that were kids, but then never really watched it as adults, and they go, fucking crazy. There's, you know, local wrestling and stuff, right?
What's the capacity of the Commodore Ballroom, just out of curiosity, for people?
I believe it's 950.
950.
Yeah, 950 before, you know.
Before the ring.
Yeah. So, like, but, you know, it's known to, like, cram in there at least 1,200, 1,500. Yeah. I've been to shows there where it's, like, packed and like sweaty and stuff.
So, yeah. So you were living the dream. You were traveling and you were also getting to work at the places you went to. Like,
yeah.
Especially here, right?
Yeah.
You were just here for a vacation, then you found us and you got to work. So how I just want to ask, how
did that happen?
How do you support yourself and, you know, find that many resources to go around? Because I think that's a dream for a lot of us here.
Thanks, because I was trying to find the way to ask that question without coming off as, you know, a dick.
No,
you weren't exactly.
Not at all. Well, I mean, I can only speak for my own personal experience, right? Yeah. So, I mean, like, I think for me, getting to travel and like visit certain places is like has always been like a dream of mine. Getting to wrestle on top of that is like, you know, the cherry on top, right? Because it's obviously something that we all love doing.
It's gravy.
Yeah, right. So I think most of the time it's just you got to do whatever you got to do, right? For me, it was like I was working maybe 2-3 jobs at the time, you know, and then just being able to like save up that money to go and travel. And I think it's like, for me, it's like, okay, I have a plan, right? Like, I want to be traveling. I want to be doing this sort of stuff. Whatever it is, whether it's traveling or saving up for a house, saving up for a family, whatever it is, you know what I mean? I found that as long as you just have a plan and you stick to it, and if that plan is, you know, congruent to however you want to live your life, then like, if there's a will, then there's a way. You know what I mean? If you guys know, you know. So like, yeah, it was just me just saving up money and having this plan in my head and being like, okay, it costs X amount of dollars to get a plane ticket, it's going to cost X amount of dollars to support myself, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, along the way with like Australia, it's like, okay, I can get a work holiday visa that'll help me supplement, you know, my stay there. Right. So, yeah, to answer your question, it's just you just got to figure out whatever you got to do to go do what you want to do.
That's
right?
Fair.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, you got to do what you got
to
do, right?
So it actually takes some planning to be a legit drifter.
Yes, and I'm glad that you said drifter, because being a drifter is just, I don't know, like if you ask, you know, I'm probably, like, compared to like a lot of my other friends that travel and stuff like that, on a scale of like 1 to 10, I'm probably like around like a 5 or like a 4 or something like that in terms of like traveling around and being like that sort of backpacker drifter type dude, right? I've known guys, like friends of mine, that are like at a 9, where like they've traveled like so many other places, and I'm just like, geez, how do you guys do that?
Yeah,
I'm asking the same questions you guys are asking me, right?
Yeah.
So, but then they say the same thing. It's like they have like this love or whatever it is for what they want to do. It just so happens to be traveling. So, you know, again, you just gotta do.
It's not enough to just have a guitar and a black leather vest.
Yeah, yeah, like the little hobo stick with like a little bag. I mean, you could, you know, it just depends on how, you know, how much you want to spend a day and like, you know, how you live within your means and stuff like that, right? So,
when you were driving out here, you mentioned that you had a bit of an uphill climb, like, you know, being Asian and having this body type.
Yeah.
And
you're not that small, though. I mean,
he's not small at all.
Yeah, but, you know, like, relative
thanks,
the John Cena's of the world.
We're at
a disadvantage physically.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that it was an uphill climb for you. But you also mentioned that given the renaissance of the cruiserweight division, it's been easier for guys like us.
Yeah.
So how's that been for you? Like, what's your outlook on the change in the wrestling landscape today?
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, like we can all agree, before the change with like the cruiserweights and all that sort of stuff, like there was no chance for like guys like, you know, myself and like other smaller guys, right? Like the only option was probably like go to Japan or like Mexico or something like that. Like,
but was that an option for you? Like, is that something you
absolutely
actually wanted to do?
Absolutely. Like, going to Japan was one of my things. Like, I wanted to do that. But I guess at the time, and I don't want to make it sound like they're excuses or anything like that, but, like, you know, injuries happen, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then at the time, you know, I was gearing up, ready to go, you know, really heavily training and stuff like that, and then some freak accident happens, and then you're on the shelf for, like, you know, X amount of months, right? And then I guess on top of that, sort of, like, life sort of, like, happens as well, you know? Like, sometimes indie wrestling doesn't pay the bills, right?
Mm-hmm, that's
and
true.
Sometimes, and so, like, you know, when you're on the shelf like that, you got to think of other options to support yourself, you know? And so, you know, your path sort of, like, you know, takes detours here and there, right? And so you got to, like, go back to the drawing board and, like, figure a new plan out, right?
Yeah.
But fast-forwarding now with, like, the whole, you know, Cruiserweight division coming up, I mean, like, guys like the Bollywood Boys, you know, they're out next NXT right now.
Yeah.
Back like 2-3 years ago, people would be laughing at them, be like, "Yo, you guys aren't going to the WWE. There's no way." Now look at them, right?
Yeah.
Because you're right. Because like I think it's because the indie scene, right? There's like most of the guys on the indie scene were like, I was surprised to figure out that they were like, you know, not that much taller than me. Maybe they're maybe a little bit heavier than me, but you know, not. By WWE standards at all, you know?
The difference wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's negligible, like, when you're in the ring with them.
Right, exactly. But now, just, like, the talent that is coming out of the indies nowadays, like...
My God.
The WWE can't even... They can't deny it, right? Like, a big company like that...
They're getting them.
Right? Yeah, that's why they're all calling them up, you know what
and
I mean?
It's not just them. It's also NJPW.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also these other players, and then you have guys like PWG that are built off of the backs of those guys.
Exactly, right? So I guess that whole indie scene and just the way things are now with the way the wrestling scene is, like, there are those opportunities that are popping up, you know what I mean?
Would you say that as an individual performer, though, that business has really improved since then, since this boom?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, just the popularity of pro wrestling and, like, how it's reaching more people, it's definitely like contributing to the popularity of pro wrestling in general, you know. Like back home, for example, a lot of our independent shows, like maybe like 5-6 years ago, we have small crowds and stuff like that, and they're all consisted of just like wrestling fans. But nowadays, we get like, you know, hipster type dudes coming to the shows.
Hey, those,
you know,
BC kids. Right? Those BC kids.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, my bad. You know, dudes with big beards and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
So I know where they come from.
You know, they're coming in and, you know, oh, it's pro wrestling, this is cool, and blah, 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 this and that. So, which is great because it's, you know, we're reaching out to like bigger audiences, which is what we want. You know, we want to be selling more tickets so that
put butts in seats
exactly, so that we can further, you know, carry the pro wrestling further on. You know, so
let me ask you something though. You've been doing this for almost 10 years. 10 years this year, right?
Yeah, it's gonna be 10 years this Sunday.
Oh, Lord!
Yo!
Oh, hey!
That's a coincidence.
Oh,
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, me too.
Let me just say happy 10th anniversary.
thanks.
On that note, though, it's been 10. It's gonna be 10 years this Sunday, this week.
Yep.
What is your overarching career goal at this moment? Because you're everywhere right now. You traveled. You went to Australia. You went here to the Philippines. What are you trying to accomplish now in your career, at this stage of your career?
Well, obviously, what we touched upon with the whole Cruiserweight division and all that sort of stuff, you know, the window of opportunity is a little bit better than it was before.
Yeah.
That being said, where I am right now, my career is, you know, right here, right now, like in the Philippines, you know? Let me explain.
We're intrigued.
Before coming here, right? When I was planning stuff out, and then I found out about PWR and that sort of stuff. You know, I always asked myself, I was like, I could always, you know, take this money and this time that I'm spending, putting it towards coming here, and like I could easily just, you know, make my way out to Orlando or make my way out to Philly and like work with, you know, companies like ROH or something like that. But for some reason I was like, you know what? No. Like, and like, you know, I'm a big believer of like, you know, carving your own path and like doing what you gotta do, like, to wherever you feel you gotta do, right? Like, while everybody in the indie scene is trying to make it to one place, I figured I'm gonna go this way just so, like, I guess for, like, my personal reasons, you know what I mean? Like, besides traveling or whatever, blah, 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 coming to Philippines. I love Philippines, by the way. Like, I love coming here anyways. Why don't I just, like, you know, take this little detour, contribute whatever I can, you know, to the scene out here, and see what happens after that, you know what I mean? Like, coming here, I was just like, man, like, there's a huge, like, in my eyes, there's a young and upcoming scene here in the Philippines, and, like, I remember watching, like, videos, PWR and stuff, like, your fans are just, like...
Are you coming to the show?
Yeah, he's coming to the show.
I hope so. I think he's coming to the show. I hope to see, like,
we're not training on Sunday. That's
okay.
For sure.
Is that what's happening? Okay, so sure. Yeah. Hopefully I can make it out there. Oh,
you wouldn't know until you actually get the fan experience where you hear all the unique chants.
Good God!
Right. So, you know, and I was just like, man, this is pretty cool. You know what you guys got going on here, and it's like. You know, I just sort of felt like I wanted to be a part of it, you know, me being Filipino and stuff. I was like, man, this is fulfilling my needs as, you know, my personal, you know, like, loves and passions and stuff like that all in one, you know, rather than taking that sort of other path, you know what I mean? I feel this could be way more rewarding, you know what I mean, in my eyes. You know?
That is so zen, man.
Yeah.
We have a great guy.
One thing you guys don't know about Billy Sweat is that he's a very zen type guy.
Zen master.
Yeah, I don't know about a master, but I come from the West Coast of Vancouver. Everybody's super chill, you know. There's certain things out there that, no, you know, help out with the chill.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
And, like,
weird.
I, you know, like, yes. Billy Suede is an advocate and a connoisseur of certain things. And
without saying anything.
In the interest of Billy Suede's safety and welfare in this country, you cannot name any of those things.
Right.
But we're talking about yoga, guys.
Yeah, yoga.
Absolutely healthy, guys.
I'm a huge yoga enthusiast.
All right, now, we're just about to wrap up here, and we're trying not to get ourselves killed. So let me ask you, who's your favorite wrestler of all time, and what's your favorite match of all time?
Good Lord.
We ask this to everyone, man.
Right.
Don't worry.
I've... Like, do I have to, like, number them off? Or,
no, up just to you, one, man. Up to you.
Like, because... Like,
I'm not going to hold you back.
If you can go number one, or if it's a list of five.
So number one, close, very, very closely followed up by number two. So number one would be the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Right. But very, very closely is the Macho Man, Randy Savage. I mean...
I like you so much more now.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Like...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Flair, just because... He can wrestle a broomstick and make it look good. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I love that era of wrestling, like the Four Horsemen, like Arn Anderson.
Arn Anderson.
Oh, we said it at the same time. We said it at the same time.
We're gonna be such good friends.
Are we soulmates here, buddy? Or what's going on here?
Wait, is Arn your number three?
Was that?
Is Arn your number three?
Arn is definitely up in the top five. And then going on to, like, Macho Man, like, he's just he's the epitome of pro wrestling being out, like, what it is, like, to me, because to me pro wrestling is just one of the most outrageous things ever.
And
he was just this intense character inside and outside of the ring, you know, but, like, at the same time, he was like, if this makes sense, he was like the most professional guy in my opinion, you know what I mean, because, like, he, in terms of, like, being a professional wrestler, like, you know, working that gimmick and stuff like that, it's just even the contrast, like, I don't know if this is probably, like, going really detailed, but, like, there's this one WWE film or something like that where they showed, like, behind the scenes stuff, and there's an actual, like, clip of, I think it's in Macho Man's DVD, where he's running promos, but then the camera's not rolling, but, like, it's still on him, and, like, you could see him, like, running his lines through his head, and, like, it's just, like, because, like, it's just, I guess that they caught him at just, like, a regular moment where, like, he's out of his gimmick and stuff like that. Just so just seeing that contrast to what his character is, I don't know, to me, it's, like, like it's really interesting to see that. I think that's one of the things that I got into wrestling for, is because these guys play these larger than life characters, but then behind, you know, in regular life, they're just regular guys, you know? It's something about that appeals to me, like being able to play that character, but then also being just like a regular person, you know what I mean?
Like able to compartmentalize.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think I watched like some WrestleMania DVD where like the first time I saw like behind the scenes, it was like Triple H against Booker T or something like that. And then you see like sort of behind the scenes of, you know, those two guys like working out their match. And that was like the first time, that blew my mind. This is before I started working as a wrestler. I was like, holy shit, man, like these guys are just right. I don't know, something about that just I don't know. I don't know if that that might sound weird, I don't know, but yeah.
No, it's fine.
Now, what's your all-time favorite match? The one match you keep going back to,
like that if you have to have a happy place in wrestling.
Like I think the obvious one would be WrestleMania 3 Macho Man against Ricky Steamboat. But
saw that the other night.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, but I think for some odd reason, any match with the Brainbusters involved, like Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, because in my opinion, again, like I said, I love that era of wrestling.
Yeah.
In my opinion, like those two, especially in tag team wrestling, those two guys are
aces.
Yeah, absolutely. They're fucking bosses. Like you can see it now in the Revival. Like yes. Those guys are just such a throwback, and they do it so well. Like to me, that's what heel tag team wrestling is supposed to be. Brainbusters, the Revival. You know what I mean? Just like they're not flashy dudes. They look like those old school type wrestlers, like big barrel chested, like, you know, guts and stuff like that.
Or like your Angostito.
Right? But they I don't know, like and like Arn Anderson's work rate is just so unbelievable. Like when he stomps a guy, it looks like he's stomping the shit out of him, right? But, like, you know, he's such a great worker that, like, you know, it's like, yeah, right? Not to, like, you know, try to kayfabe that, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Most of the guys who listen to this podcast are in on it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry about it. Internet.
Yeah.
In
terms of, like, technicality and, like, from a worker standpoint, like, I'll watch Brainbusters versus Rockers. Like classic tag team matches, like the way tag team matches should go, and like to me that just makes me all feel giddy inside. I'm just like, dude, this is like craftsmanship right here. You know what I mean? So, I think those would probably be some of my favorite matches.
And to wrap that one up, what's your most favorite match that you've been in?
That I've been in
so far?
Oh, there's a lot, but whenever...
If I had to name one,
there's back in, something like 2011 or something like that, I don't know. Kyle O'Reilly. Myself and Kyle O'Reilly had a match before he left onto his whole big indie run. Because at that time, like, he was already a boss. And, like, when you get to work guys like that, like their caliber... It's so easy. Like literally, I just, you know, we go in there, talk about a couple things, but then as soon as we step in the ring, like, he takes care of me like I'm this little kid. You know what I mean? Like I'm his son. Like, it's so crazy. Like, I sit in the passenger seat, he takes the wheel, and boom, we go off. You know what I mean? And it's just like, it's so easy. Like, it's easy. Like, I don't have to, like, think twice about things when I worked with him. I think I worked him like a handful of times, right? And every single time, it just got better and better. And, like, to me, that's when I found out. I was like, okay, this is what, you know, if you get to a certain level where, like, you know, working a match that becomes this easy. But, you know, to like, the fans, it, you know, it might look like this crazy match. But, like, between me and Kyle, it's just like, man, this is the way... Like, can I work like this all the time? Like, please, like this
you
is...
get as a wrestler, you get a lot of those opponents. Like,
yeah,
can you work him all the time, please.
Yeah, like, I mean, I've obviously wrestled a whole bunch of guys that are like that, but I think one that stands out is with Kyle, and like, because he's
amazing.
You know, we don't want to toot his fucking horn or anything like that, right? But
he's already been champion and all that, right?
Yo, I got him at Wrestle Kingdom this last one.
Yeah,
this last one in Japan. I was just like, watching him work, it's like, you know he's good.
Yeah.
And then you still, like, while you're watching him, you just try and figure out, I still don't know why, but yeah. It's so simple with him.
Yo, because he likes to do, he likes to incorporate a lot of MMA
yes,
stuff.
Yes, MMA stuff.
Have you guys seen him and Kushida?
Yes. That was, okay. Oh God.
Oh my God. Like, are you just kidding me? Like the way they worked in
I think
MMA
that was a G1
stuff.
That was a G1 match.
Yeah
it was a G1 and if, I'm sure it was also a junior heavyweight match.
Yeah. Like they the way they fused, cause I think Kushida, like, I think he like does like jujitsu or something like that.
He does.
He's an underrated
so yeah. Oh man, like you get those two guys together, like it was just I don't know, they had the recipe, you know what I mean? And it was awesome and fun to watch. So
yeah. I guess just to bookend everything, you mentioned yourself that the wrestling scene here is just growing, it's young, it's vibrant.
Yeah.
What is that one message you could pass on to the aspiring wrestlers or the current wrestlers or even those people on their couch who are like, I'm not sure if I should go for it, but I kind of want to.
Especially those who, you walked in boot camp last Sunday and we were in the middle of starting a new batch, right? So.
Yeah.
Especially those guys who are just starting out in their wrestling training.
Yeah. I think, oh man, if you know, whatever level of seriousness or whatever you want to put into this wrestling thing, like, make sure it's like 110%, you know, and like, you know, make sure that you have love for what you do, and. You know, be a student of your craft, you know, like whatever it is, whether you go watch videotape or, you know, go to a seminar or like whatever it is, you know, just try to do 100% of whatever you can do. You know, you get what you put in, you know, with anything in life. Same thing goes with pro wrestling and like. And also, you know, have fun with it, you know, because that's what pro wrestling is all about. Like, end of the day, it's all about just having fun and like, but you know, as well, taking it seriously and like making sure that, you know, that you're doing well with your craft. You know what I mean? And you're putting that 110% into it. So,
all right, thank you very much, the beautiful Billy Suede.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, we hope to see you on Sunday on your 10th anniversary.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully, I can get a ticket or something like that. If you guys can hook me up with a ticket, that'd be great.
Just find me. I'm.
He's working the door.
I work the
okay.
No, probably not the door. No, not the door.
Near the door.
Near the door.
Okay,
near
so
door.
I'll find you, and then I'll probably we'll see if you can slip me in through the back or something like that.
No, don't worry. Okay. The venue's pretty okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Billy Suede.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Big thanks once again to the beautiful Billy Suede. If you see him at the next PWR show, that's Path of Gold, by the way, don't be afraid to say hi. I'm sure he'll be nice enough to say hi back. Right? Speaking of Path of Gold, it's taking place on Sunday. That's February 26th at
Sunday,
2 p.m.
Sunday.
At the Pioneer Unilab Bayanihan Center. Again, it's along Pioneer Street in Mandaluyong. Parking's free. Food isn't. But there are a lot of food establishments nearby.
Is Los Ingobernables de Pinas? Ingo Burritos.
That's giving infringement, man.
Yeah, sorry. Is it coming back?
I think it is.
Now we'll have to
ask
the sole proprietor.
The sole proprietor.
Mr. Angelo.
I heard he's a little less kupal than some other guys. So yeah.
By the way, a certain general manager isn't even watching the match he's put together.
Oh no, I'm actually scouting. I'm on a scouting trip this weekend in
Taiwan.
Who's in Taiwan?
Lulmo.
Who's in Taiwan?
I've got family in Taiwan, man. No, there is a wrestling scene in Taiwan.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Clearly.
Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
Shut up. My personal time. It's my personal time.
Do you have a representative watching or at least videotaping?
Don't you have like
a recorded message?
Don't you have like a cousin in the company?
I'm gonna put a laptop there, and when it buzzes, you know I'm watching. Anyway,
rehashing that gimmick though.
Yeah. Anyway, follow us on Twitter if there's anything you need, like a discount for the PWR tickets. It's fine. We'll totally give those out. It's at Roiswar. At Caveman Camus, at _Stancy, or for the podcast.
Slide into our DMs.
It's at the SGP Podcast. We're also on Facebook, by the way. And big shout outs to everybody who caught the latest episode of The Wrestling Gods.
Hey, you know what? This second episode was a lot better than the first one.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Is it because Red was there?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it because they doubled down on the jokes?
Yes. Also.
Ah, wonderful.
Not just that, but it's like you guys, the dynamic with the mortals is better.
Oh, okay. So
it's a little better.
You know, as the day goes on.
Yeah. We kind of warmed up. But thank you. We actually rated well. We rated a 0.5.
Oh my God, that's like a blip.
Yes, it is. No, it literally is.
That's a literal.
It literally is a blip.
In broadcast journalism, we have heard
from credible inside sources. We have rated better than The Walking Dead.
Replace.
Well, not really better, but like right around that area.
Fine, as much as The Walking Dead.
All right, so here's how it goes down. Shit. We were among the top 5 programs that rated on Fox through the week.
If you know anyone in advertising, if you work for an advertising company, please convince your bosses that wrestling is worth investing on.
And the people actually do watch wrestling and have purchasing power.
Oh.
Because that's what keeps us on the air.
Oh. Because that support. And we do need that support, literally. I'm not fucking around here. We're not fucking around here.
Yeah.
No, I'm not fucking around here.
Like, we just came from a meeting yesterday where we were told to
say that exact message.
So this is as bare as it gets, as raw as it gets. We do need the support. We need the cash money. And we need to keep wrestling on cable TV.
I get it now.
Read between the lines, my man.
All right, so there. So,
special shout out, by the way, to Chili Willy, an avid listener of the podcast. He'll be happy to know that Billy Suede was on this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm sure he will have a hell of a time listening to this episode of the story.
And you know, he came to the last show. I think we might see our good friend Chili.
Yes, of course.
God, I hope so.
I see him every Sunday, so. You saw him at the hotel.
I saw him at the hotel. It's nice.
You served him.
Oh yeah, no. I did not just serve him. I showed him around. I worked.
He went above and beyond.
I like I always do. It's part of my job, man.
Okay.
Part of my job. But hey, ibang
bagay din mo na above and beyond.
Ouch. You know.
All right, before these two get at it, we're going to end this episode of the SGP podcast. Thanks again to everybody who tuned in and for keeping us on your podcast apps, for subscribing, for rating, for reviewing, what have you. And we'll catch you next week on another episode. And do stay tuned, because the next episode of The Wrestling Gods airs on Fox March 10th.
March 10th.
That's on a Friday at 10:45
That is the Friday after Fastlane.
Yes, absolutely. So do stick around for that. But as for this episode of the SGP podcast, on behalf of our guest, the beautiful Billy Suede, on behalf of Ro Moran and Raf Camus, this is Stan C, and we are out of here.
Peace.
Good night. Glorious.